and thank you for joining us for the fourth episode of Burning Questions, a podcast focused on reducing risk in your communities and answering some of your questions along the way. In each episode, we'll focus on safety topics that we get a lot of questions about. We'll do our best to answer some of those questions, and we'll try and clear up any misconceptions about those topics while we're at it. If you have any questions you'd like for us to answer, leave a voicemail for us at 864-430-0510 or email us at bsfdpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll try and give you an answer in a later episode. Today, my guest is firefighter Michael Huttman. He's been with us for a little while now, and he is going to help us understand a little bit more about home fires. We're going to be talking about what causes them, how to prevent those home fires, and how to be prepared and what to do if there is a fire. So first off, hi Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
So real quick, what are some of the most common causes of home fires?
The leading cause of residential home fires is cooking equipment, accounting for almost half of all residential structure fires. Cooking equipment includes unattended cooking, cooking with grease or oil, or leaving flammable materials near the stove are probably the most common causes.
Is there anything more you can tell us about why this is the leading cause of home fires?
It's something that we do probably every day in every home. Someone preparing a meal perhaps gets distracted. They leave something on the stove. It overcooks. There's combustible materials near a burner. They're cooking with grease or oil, and it gets out of control and spreads to nearby combustibles, and you've got a kitchen fire.
How can heating equipment start a fire in a home?
Heating equipment includes residential space heaters and the furnaces that we use to heat our homes during inclement weather. Many of these are caused by faulty equipment, improper installation, or failure to clean and maintain that equipment on a regular basis.
And this can include making sure you get your chimney cleaned at least once annually, correct?
That's correct. It's a really good idea to have them cleaned and inspected by a professional to ensure that you don't have any cracks in the flue lining or anything that might cause an undetected fire to grow out of control while people are sleeping.
Absolutely. Next up is electrical distribution and lighting equipment. Now, we just call these electrical fires, but how can electricity start a fire at a home?
There's a number of causes. Occasionally, you have faulty wiring or uninspected wiring in a new construction. Probably the more common causes are those that are as a result of overloaded circuits and damaged electrical cords. Perhaps a common occurrence is we run an electrical extension cord, which really should only be used as a temporary fix for electrical needs, but are often left and used as permanent wiring. We also see the overloading and failure of electrical power strips as being a result of residential fires as well.
Now, I'm glad you mentioned overloaded circuits. We all have seen those pictures online of people who plug extension cords and splitters and adapters into splitters and adapters. Now, we have circuit breakers in our electrical panels. Does that not take care of the electrical issue?
It should. That's the theory behind them. In today's society, we're more and more tied to electronics with our phone chargers, televisions, and so on. Electrical need in our homes today are far outweigh those of 10, 20, 30 years ago. So if the home hasn't been designed and the electrical system hasn't been designed to support that, we tend to overload it, causing a problem at the electrical panel and then ultimately in the wiring.
Absolutely. So we've talked about cooking equipment, heating equipment, and some electrical fires. What are some other causes of fires that we've seen?
Other common causes are smoking materials, clothes dryers, open flame or candles, improper use or storage of flammable liquids and gases, appliance fires, children and their curiosity playing with fires, and probably the last one would be a fire that's intentionally set.
That's a good point. We do include intentional fires, but they are by far one of the least likely causes of fire that we've seen. But you did mention smoking materials and clothes dryers. With smoking materials, that's as simple as making sure that we don't have cigarettes or cigars ignited or lit while we go to sleep, making sure we manage those cigarette ashes and butts properly. Is that correct?
That's correct. And then going along with managing smoking materials, another thing that we see is they are dropped or dumped at or near a dwelling in and around the mulch that surrounds a house, and it'll smolder there for a period of time until it eventually breaks out and becomes an active fire.
That's a great point. And we'll be covering smoking-related fires in a later episode, but one of the things we do want to talk about is whenever you empty those ashtrays, make sure that the ashes are completely out, and then make sure that you put them in a non-combustible container, so a metal pan, something like that, and don't put it on a combustible deck either, because a lot of the homes around this area have vinyl siding and wooden decks. So if that fire were to start on the deck, it burns right up the siding and gets right into the attic. So make sure that you manage those smoking materials properly.
That's right.
So that covers all the common causes of home fires. What tips can you give us to prevent these home fires from occurring?
Probably one of the most important things is to be prepared, having an escape plan for your family, keeping any flammable materials away from heat sources. Again, maintaining your heating equipment, having that cleaned and inspected on a regular basis. Try to refrain from smoking inside the house. If at all possible, do that outside. Be careful with your electrical appliances. Properly store your flammable liquids such as gasoline or diesel in an approved container outside of your structure. If you're going to use candles and open flame, make sure that you use them safely. Make sure that they're in a sturdy holder. Keep away from flammable materials and never leave them unattended. And as I said, making sure that you have an escape plan for your entire family, which would allow each member of the family to plan for the event of a fire, to have two ways out, to have a meeting place once they get outside, and to ensure that we dial 911 outside the house. And then once they're outside, everybody remains outside.
Those are all great points. The only thing that I would add is to never leave your cooking unattended. Cooking is the leading cause of home fires, like we talked about earlier. So just making sure that you're always in the room while you're cooking, especially when you're using oil or you're sauteing or you're cooking anything with high heat. So Mike, you talked earlier about preparation and you also mentioned escape planning. Can you go into a little more detail on the importance of escape planning and how that can impact the outcome?
Probably the most important aspect in fire safety that we can implement in our family would be that to develop and implement an escape plan. It can mean certainly the difference between life and death. In a fire, time is of the essence. Smoke and flames can double every 30 seconds to a minute. And in today's homes, the fire tends to progress more rapidly than in a home built 20 or 30 years ago that we in the fire service refer to as a legacy home. There's more compartmentalization within the home. The fire can be contained. In today's construction, dominated by open floor plans, we don't have that. So the potential for more rapid fire spread is there. If we have a plan and we practice it, and we practice it with our family, we're less apt to be panicked when and if an emergency situation arises. That plan should include two ways out of every room to make sure that we have the quickest and the safest routes out. Making sure that we teach our children and have them practice the plan as well. Making sure that once we're out, we go to our meeting place and we remain there for the fire department's arrival. And at that point, we can advise if anybody is not at the meeting place and where they might be found.
So, Mike, you mentioned how time is critical during a home fire, and you mentioned the difference between modern construction versus legacy construction. Is there anything else you can tell us about that?
So in the newer residential construction, lightweight wood frame, as we refer to it in the fire service, the time that a fully developed fire reaches what we call its flashover stage, where everything becomes involved, in today's home, under the new construction features, there's anywhere from 3 to 7 minutes. A similar time frame that would be applicable to the legacy construction that's compartmentalized with larger building components, people within the structure had an estimated 15 to 20 minutes to escape. So you can see that it's even more important and more crucial today that we get early detection and rapid escape.
That's a great point. And as you said earlier, we need two ways out of every room. With that, is there anything in particular we should do to make sure that people that may have difficulty get out of the house?
Yeah, so if you have children or elderly people that live within your home that have mobility issues, that plan becomes even more crucial, as it might require them to have the necessity for additional assistance in order to escape safely.
And how often do you think we should practice this escape plan?
It's something that obviously the more we practice, the more proficient we become at it. I know when we go to schools and present fire safety and fire prevention and fire education, we try and send the kids home with homework, for lack of a better word, where we have them develop an escape plan, and then they have to educate their family members, and then they have to practice it. And it could even be a contest where they have a simulated fire. Everybody has to go outside and go to their meeting place.
And the last two things I wanted to talk about while we were speaking about preparation is the importance of smoke alarms and then the close before you doze program. Is there anything else you could tell us about those two things?
Early detection, as we talked about earlier, is probably the paramount component of having a home safety plan. Smoke detectors in the appropriate locations throughout the home, in every room, on every floor, to ensure early warning and early notification of everybody in their home will help us to activate, or help your family to activate, that escape plan that they've developed. Another component is the simple concept of closing before you doze. Simply closing a bedroom door can provide life-saving time and put a barrier between not only the fire, but the smoke. Most fire fatalities occur as a result of smoke as opposed to direct flame contact. So it's important that we take that opportunity to slow the spread of fire. It also reduces the smoke damage within a structure and provides sufficient time or added time for escape.
That's a great point. What I'd like to add is you can look this video up on YouTube. It's called Close Before You Doze Demonstration Event, and it is put on by UL, or Underwriters Laboratory. They run a Fire Safety Research Institute, or FSRI. They have an excellent video that demonstrates the difference that a door can make. So I'll link that down into the description, but please, everybody, take the time to watch that video. It is eye-opening to see the difference that just an interior door can make between two rooms exposed to the same amount of smoke and heat. So, Michael, what are some things that we can do to better our situation if we find ourselves in a home fire?
It's important to notify everybody in the home that there is a fire. So be loud. Give them the most time that they can to evacuate. Once you're outside, stay outside. Never re-enter the home for any reason. You remember we spoke earlier, a fire will double in size every minute. Have that meeting place that we talked about. Make sure that everybody in your family knows where that meeting place is, and it's part of your plan for everybody to go there. And be prepared to notify the fire department when they arrive if there is someone still missing where they're apt to be. And always, always, always call 911 from outside the home. Don't try and do it from inside your home.
That's a good point. You spoke about meeting places, and I get this question a lot. Everybody assumes that a meeting place should be the mailbox, but this is not necessarily the best place that they can meet. What are some other options, especially for people that maybe don't have a mailbox or they live in an apartment building? What are some options for them?
It should be something that's not going to move. For example, if you tell the family that we're going to meet at mom's car out front, and that would be the one particular evening that mom's car is not there, that would cause some problems. So something that's a fixed stationary object besides a mailbox might be the neighbor's house, could be a tree in the front yard, something along those lines that's a fixed item that's not going to be moving around that everybody can quickly locate and go to.
So I guess the gist is, it doesn't really matter what that meeting place is, as long as everybody agrees and understands that that is where they're supposed to go.
Correct.
And to go with things that we can do in case of a fire, all the tips we just gave were mostly focused around a larger fire discovered sometime at night. But what can we do for a smaller fire? Maybe something that's on top of a stove, like a cooking fire. Are there any devices out there that we can use to extinguish that fire?
There are a number of things that we can do. If we're able to capture that fire in its earliest stages, might be something as simple as putting a top or a cover over a pan. And there's stovetop fire stops is a device that can be installed above your stovetop and contain a fusible link that releases fire suppressing powder when exposed to high heat and flame. There's also the traditional fire extinguishers. There's a variety of materials and styles and makes and sizes that are available. The important item there is that you take the time to learn how to effectively use a fire extinguisher before you need it.
And what I'll say with that is when you're choosing between using something like a stovetop fire stop or a traditional fire extinguisher, it's just to remember what your specific needs are. The stovetop fire stops, they are great for small kitchen fires directly underneath a small hood or a microwave. They work really, really well, but they do not work well in other situations. So if you're looking for something that's more general purpose, you may want to opt for the traditional fire extinguisher because it can serve more uses than just stovetops. And what I'll add with that is make sure that you're trained on how it operates. I know Boiling Springs, we offer fire extinguisher training to industries that are in our service area, but call your local fire department and see what their extinguisher training services are. They may have a program out there that trains residents or teaches other fire safety behaviors for in the home.
That's right.
So now we've talked about what to do if there's a fire. What can we do after the fire? Let's say, what are some resources and support that we can find if we've already been affected by a home fire?
There's a number of organizations in the various communities that can provide immediate relief and support. Some as early as the actual date and time that the event occurred. For example, the Red Cross has a disaster action team that will, when notified, will respond to the fire scene, meet up with the families and the residents of the involved building, and help them to make arrangements for housing if the home is no longer tenable. They'll provide them with some financial assistance, clothing items, and comfort kits to help them move forward over the next couple of days until a more permanent resolution can be brought about. Other organizations, such as churches and chaplaincies, can also help out during this time. And then they're going to want to make sure that they notify their insurance company as soon as possible so that they can get a representative out there to initiate the claim. And they too often will be able to provide housing and some additional resources for the family that's been involved until such time as they can make some permanent resolution.
Some other organizations that also offer some disaster relief would be the Salvation Army and United Way. And there may be some different ones in your area, so reach out to your local fire department, see if they have any guidance for who else might be available to give them assistance.
That's correct.
Boiling Springs actually has a full-time chaplain to assist the public as well as our staff with difficult emergency responses. So if you unfortunately are affected by a home fire, our chaplain may be able to give you some emotional support or point you in the right direction. To wrap this up, I wanted to make sure that we covered some of the services that we offer here at Boiling Springs Fire District. One of the things that we do is we offer a service called a home safety visit. And that is where we come to your home, we walk through your home, and we try and find all of the possible risks associated with your property. This is a free service. It's not an inspection. There's no fines. There's nothing associated with this other than trying to get the right information into your hands so you can make the best decision you can. We cover things from smoke alarms to carbon monoxide alarms, slips, trips, and falls. Anything you can imagine that would make your home safer, we'll try and cover it and give you advice on how you can keep yourself and your family safe in your home. So to recap, the things we've covered in today's episode, we covered the most common causes of home fires. We gave some tips on how to prevent those home fires. And the last part was how to be prepared and what to do if there is a fire in your home. Some of the most important parts of that were making sure that your smoke alarms are serviced, making sure they're operational, and doing simple things like closing a bedroom door before you go to bed. Having a family escape plan is crucial to making sure that everyone survives if you are unfortunate enough to have a home fire, because that house can be replaced, but you and your family cannot. I want to take this time to say thank you to my guest, Firefighter Michael Huppman.
You're very welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today.
If I can ask our listeners to do two things for me. The first is I'm going to include a link to a fire safety checklist in the description of this video. Take the time, download that checklist, and go through it with your family. And the second thing is try and complete a fire escape plan. Review it with your families, your loved ones, your roommates. Make sure everybody has that meeting place. That way, if there is a home fire, you know what to do and you can escape it safely. This podcast was made possible by the Boiling Springs Fire District in Greenville, South Carolina. Thank you all for being with me today. I'm Captain Chris Camacho. Stay safe out there.
And hashtag have a fire safe day.